Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we're going to be talking about the Billy Meier case this evening. Probably no surprise there. Edward Albert Meier is a 78-year-old man who lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland. The tiny mountain village is called Hinterschmidruti. It's about 52 minutes east of Zurich by automobile. Billy is an extremely unusual man. He's written 40 books and over 600 booklets. His booklets describe his face-to-face contacts with extraterrestrial humans. Billy's contacts go back to 1945 when he was a small boy growing up in Bulach, Switzerland. He started to get telepathic messages from a man named Sfath. Sfath was from a race of extraterrestrial humans that originally allowed themselves to be called the Pleiadians. But in 1995, when they left the Earth, they gave us their true identity as the Pleiaren. They live in a star system some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades, in a different space and time configuration. And they live on a planet called Era. And Era is very similar to our Earth in many respects. If you would go back, say, 2,000-3,000 years ago. Era, they do not take any oil or any minerals out of the soil. They do not build roads on the surface. They don't travel on the surface of their planet. They keep their population at about 500 million, and they keep their forests extremely huge, and they do not in any way negatively impact the environment of the world that they live on, because they understand that everything is a part of something they call the creation. And the creation doesn't have an analogy to the religious term God, because the universal consciousness is not a God. It doesn't give commands. It is a neutral, positive, balanced entity that creates universes as a part of its own evolution. It also creates human spirits as a part of its own evolution. And every human being has within them a spirit. The spirit enters into the body of the fetus 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, and the spirit brings in with it something called the consciousness block. And the consciousness block forms your new material consciousness in the new lifetime. And it contains certain areas. Your consciousness has a conscious mind, an unconscious mind, a subconscious mind. Deep within your subconscious mind are the memories of your predecessor personalities. You have something in your mind, your mentality, your consciousness block called the psyche. And the psyche regulates and looks after the thoughts and the feelings of your material consciousness. You get a new material consciousness each time you're born. However, you have the same spiritual consciousness that you had at your first lifetime. And each physical lifetime brings wisdom and power to the spirit form if there's any kind of evolution that occurs in that lifetime. Now, the what controls your thoughts and feelings, what regulates the thoughts and looks after the thoughts and the feelings of the spirit form, is something called the Gemut. And the Gemut is what controls and looks after and regulates your spiritual consciousness. It's a part of your spirit body. We're actually born with a spirit body. Now, each one of these lifetimes, these material lifetimes that you live, if there's any evolution at all, it brings more power and more knowledge to your spirit form. And that's really the purpose of our life, is to each one of these lifetimes to bring more wisdom to the spirit form. And then after many millions of lifetimes, you'll merge back with the universal consciousness, the creation that I told you about earlier. Now, one of the creational natural laws is striving. And the fact of the new time and the current time is that the human being has newly discovered what's called the Eurocreational law of evolutive striving. Also, the age of Aquarius pushes forward with horrendous power and spurs on the striving of the human being. There are certain creational natural laws that the universal consciousness has put in place. One of these is love, and the other one is striving. Love can be wisdom-conditioned love, and that's the kind of love I'm talking about in terms of creational natural law. Wisdom-conditioned love is effective love. It's constant. It's consistent over time. And it's also related to the ability to observe things. And there's a spiritual process that takes place in the spiritual consciousness called Empfinden. And that spiritual process is that fine, sensitive spiritual feeling that's related to observation. And the Gemut can receive something called these swinging waves during this Empfinden process. Let me read a little something. The Empfinden only receives swinging waves which are of a purely spiritual nature, and thus in the spiritual sense, a neutral, positive, equalized form. See, the universal consciousness thinks in neutral, positive terms. It always maintains an equalized balance. And that's the goal for our thought process in our psyche. The goal is to always maintain neutral, positive balance. So you're not thinking negative about anything, anyone. And you're not thinking too positive either about anything, anyone. You're in a neutral positive state. You're in balance. That's the harmonious balance. And that's the state that the universal consciousness stays in. Now, your spiritual consciousness always stays in that neutral positive balance. So the goal is to bring the material consciousness into the neutral positive balance as well. And when you do that, that's when you have monstrous power associated to your thinking. Unfortunately, if you get unequalized in balance, if you become too negative or too positive, your thoughts can actually become destructive to yourself, especially if those thoughts are automatic. Automatic thoughts are thoughts that a lot of times come up from the unconscious mind and rotate continually rotate, and usually with very damaging effects. It's your own mental disharmony which causes your suffering to grow. Now, one of the creational natural laws is striving, as I was talking about before. The continual striving will typically reduce the suffering in your life, although there is a certain level of adversity associated with continually striving. Let me continue with what it says here, and this is in the book called The Way to Live. It is the time of the upthrusting truth, which demands intelligence, reason, logic, and knowledge, and progress. It is the time of the breaking through of the natural sciences and of other real and true sciences. This is talking about the age we're in right now. It is the new time of the renewal. And this renewal and this time do not want to believe any longer nor be connected any longer to assumption. That's one of the things in the Age of Aquarius is belief goes away, assumption goes away. Rather, they solely want to know. And that's the key here. We want to know what the truth is. And all rational human beings of this time want to evolve, progress, and step forward through their striving given by creational law in their knowledge, in their intelligence, and in their rationality, and thus in their consciousness, which is able to lead them to that which is higher and more absolutely fully developed. So that's one of the creational natural laws that we function under, is the need to strive, to learn more, to continually be focused on learning more. Now, one of the things that's undermining our striving today is electronic media. Cell phones, YouTube, television, radio, all of these distractions that take us away from our primary purpose for being here, which is striving, the evolution of our consciousness. In fact, the electronic media is even dangerous for your psyche. It destroys your brain. It's a tremendous situation that we're in. The human being who follows the creational striving longs for rationality, for intelligence, for logic, for recognizing and understanding. All knowledge, recognition, understanding, and grasping, and the experience for all things arise, can only arise out of the deepest depths of the human consciousness, and therefore from the innermost part of the human being himself or herself. It's one of the things that Billy said in the writing, How It All Began, that you really recognize the truth in your innermost self, your innermost contemplations, and your innermost thoughts. You don't need someone else to tell you what the truth is. You don't need a sign. You need to learn to think for yourself, to be an independent thinker, because independent thinking is what evolves your consciousness. Now, Billy was a very, very young boy when he first had his extraterrestrial contacts. His very first one was with Svoth, and Svoth took him up into his pear-shaped metallic craft and brought him up high into Earth orbit. And Billy looked around the ship, and he could see the screens on the ships, and he could see people on these screens. And Svoth started to tell Billy about his previous lives, and that he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And that in each one of these lifetimes, he taught the ancient universal teachings that we're talking about now, like striving. And I started to talk about love there briefly, and I kind of went off on a tangent. Because that's what's very interesting about the universal consciousness, is the creations of the universal consciousness, the incredible splendor of nature, is the visible expression of the love of creation. Creation actually radiates love. And at every point in time, at every moment, we can sense the radiating love of creation. Now, most people don't. Most people do no longer are sensitive enough to sense the radiating love of creation. And let me read another section here. Something called the Sensitivat, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that German word wrong. What the Sensitivat fundamentally is that when a human being is capable of fine spiritual perception and finding, he or she can receive the swinging waves. So all of nature is connected by the swinging waves. And there's a beautiful passage in the Goblet of Truth that kind of talks about how nature is connected through the swinging waves. And it's entitled, What the Truth Knows to Say. And it goes on and explains that rivers, stones, plants, trees, bushes, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage to rebirth, in rebirth into the world of pure spirit. And many of these creatures are connected by psychic vibrations, by these swinging waves. And they're aware of each other. And you can see them move as units, like the birds when they fly in a flock, and insects move that way, and sometimes fish, sometimes deer when they're running in a group, all function that way. You see, nature is an indissoluble whole, and it is designed to work as a unit. And that's another creational natural law, is that no human being is independent. And when I first read that, I was a little taken aback by that. I was shocked by that. We're supposed to be independent thinkers, but we are not independent from creation. We are dependent on creation. We are dependent on air to breathe. We're dependent on sunshine to give us vitamin D. Without sunshine and vitamin D, we'd all get sick and die. We'd all freeze to death, for heaven's sake. We're dependent on nature, and we just don't understand that yet. We're dependent on the plants for food, the animals for food, and also for a kind of companionship that we don't understand anymore. Because we're becoming very mechanized in our thinking. We're becoming very mechanical. That's because of our thought processes have become unnatural. We have to recognize that we are dependent on creation. We're dependent on many, many things. And our subconsciousnesses are connected in a we form. All of our subconsciousness on all of the humanity is connected in ways that we don't understand. And in the book, The Way to Live, he describes a human life as being like waves which come up on the ocean and they travel for a distance and they're alive for a time and then they slowly fade back into the ocean. And that's the way the material life is. It's the same way. It comes back up. There's a force in the spiritual realm which forces the life into the material realm, and this material existence comes for a while like a wave across the ocean, and then fades back into the ocean. And that's also kind of a good analogy of the way the human life works. Now, Billy would have these profound thoughts given to him by this extraterrestrial man named Sfoth, who was nearly 1,000 years old when Billy was on the ship. And one of the things that Sfoth taught Billy was something called spiritual telepathy, so that Billy could pull information down from a spiritual plane called Arahat Atharasata. Now, later in life, Billy had kind of a personal problem with Arahat Atharasata because they were so complimentary of him, and he just could not deal with that. It just was so against his own nature to be puffed up like that, as he said. He actually stopped his contacts for a while with Arahat Atharasata. So it is the human being's nature, as it is with every other existence, to strive in the course of the eternal evolution. So that's the creational natural law, and that's what we all need, one of the things we need to focus on. So the purpose of our lives is striving. The purpose of our life is love, and the purpose of our life is evolving our consciousness to gather wisdom. Now, wisdom is a kind of knowledge that produces energy. So when you gather wisdom, you will help the world around you, the plants, the animals, the people. Now, I talked a little bit about creation earlier, and creation in the Maya material is called an immeasurable mystery suspended in an immeasurable expanse. And our universe is so much larger than we can even imagine. It's billions of light years across. There are over 1 billion galaxies, and there are hundreds of billions of stars in each galaxy. Creation is identical to the term universal consciousness, which guides and prevails in the being of consciousness. It's one of the words I don't really have a good definition for yet. And they also call it a double helix. And they talk about its pulsating arms. Now, the human DNA has a double helix, two spirals which rotate around a center column. But I can't tell you where the pulsating double helix arms of the universal consciousness are. Now, I can tell you each galaxy has arms, but I don't know where this particular pulsating double helix arms, where they live. And they're said to rotate against each other. And the universe is said to be creation's internal and external body. Well, remember when I talked about that we have something called the Gemut in our spiritual consciousness that regulates and looks after and controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. Well, guess what? The creation has a universal Gemut. Now, Gemut is a non-translatable German term for the spiritual counterpart of the psyche. Now, creation's pervades everything. So therefore, there is a oneness with creation. And creation has a dormant period. It goes through an expansion phase, which lasts trillions of years. So in our universe, exploded from this flea-sized ball, it will expand for trillions of years, and then it will contract for trillions of years. And then it will go dormant. One of these expansion and contraction phases is called a great time. And it lasts about 311 trillion years. And there are 7 times 7 great times. Now, our universe is kind of unusual in a sense because for a couple of reasons. It has a parallel universe called the Tao universe, both of which were created 46 trillion years ago. But we're also at the very first evolutionary step of a universe because we have a matter belt. Most universes do not have a material belt. And I find that very disturbing. I can't tell you why. Excuse me. But the material belt is where all the matter exists. Planets, suns, galaxies, meteors, comets, gases, all the dark matter. All of these things exist only within the material belt. And there are seven belts in our universe, and they counter-rotate against one another. And they each have a specific function. But we're in the material belt. So that's kind of a quick overview of what the creation is. Now, one of the things that the Maya material repeats about the creation all the time, and I don't know what it means exactly, it says that creation is the being and the non-being of life. So there must be both a being and a non-being status of life. Is that life in the physical and life in the spiritual? I don't know. But the creation is the most immense mass of spiritual energy in the universe. And it's said to be immeasurable in its wisdom, in its knowledge, in its love, in its harmony. We have much to learn about the creation. Maybe I'll just leave it there. And it's one of those subjects that is a little mind-boggling when you start to try to wrap your mind around it. One interesting thing that it says here in the book, The Way to Live, a human being who has ascertained the effective truth to such a degree can no longer have anything made evident to him or her from the outside, because he or she is striving, which is a condition by creational law, fathoms all evidence in himself by working with his or her ideas and gaining knowledge and cognitions from them, which he slash she knows to convert in logical sequence into experience, which he or she in turn forms into wisdom. So when you get to a certain point, I guess, you become tremendously independent in your thinking. So Billy, as a very young boy growing up in Bulak, Switzerland, was brought this information, this very, very profound information, from this man named Svath, who he studied with for 11 years. And after the 11-year period was over, Svath was about to die because he was nearly 1,000 years old. And Billy was brought a different teacher. His second teacher was named Asket. Now, Asket is a woman from the Tao universe. The Tao universe, as I stated earlier, is a parallel universe to ours. Some of the people living there are descendants of people in our universe called the Lyrians. And the Timmers are descendants from the Lyrians. And at one point, they got the technology to be able to traverse this universal barrier that exists between each universe. So now the Timmers exist in the Tao universe. They're named after their planet, the Timmers. The first meeting between Billy and Asket occurred in the Jordanian desert in 1953. And that occurred after Billy was brought from Switzerland to Jordan in a robotic craft, which picked him up on top of a hill in Switzerland. And actually, the ship turned invisible, which was really a shocker for Billy. And Billy himself became invisible while this thing shot across the world from Switzerland to Jordan, and it landed, and Billy got out, and then Ascot's ship came out of the sky, and it looked like a falling star at first, and it got larger. It was like a 300-meter disc, and she stepped out. And brought Billy into her ship, and they went on a tremendous journey far below the Giza Plateau, below the Great Pyramid, where Billy first saw a group called the Giza Intelligences. He saw their ancient spacecraft. He saw the artifacts they had created that were religious artifacts. One was supposed to be the cross of Christ. Another one was a crown of thorns. And the other was a rusty blood-coated nail. And these artifacts were part of a program that the Giza Intelligences had been on for quite some time. Since the destruction of Atlantis and Lemuria, this group of extraterrestrial humans had descended from a long lineage of very brutal dictators who kind of took over the earth centuries after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. And they set themselves up as gods, called themselves the creators, and tormented the earth peoples with religions. Now, the Meyer information states one of those individuals was called Jehovah, and is the Jehovah in our Old Testament. So you can understand why people hate Billy across the world, and there have been over 20 attempts on his life. And that's one of the things that Svath told him would happen, that people would turn against him, and there would be tremendous attacks on Billy. And he was stunned by what he learned when he was with Ascot. And there's a whole series of contacts that talk about Billy's time with Ascot. Billy spent also 11 years of contacts with Ascot after he had spent 11 years with Svath. And some of the information in the Ascot contacts are very, very interesting. Let me read a little bit from one of these contacts. And I had told you that Billy was picked up in a robotic craft when he was up on top of a hill in Switzerland. It says here, I was picked up by a disc in the early second hour of the morning at a place which had been precisely communicated to me shortly before, which, however, Svath had already arranged with me weeks earlier, so that on day X, only the actual exact point had to be named. Bitter cold prevailed at this early morning hour as I made my way to the favorite place of my thoughts, where I was often alone for so many hours, and where 16 days earlier Svath had announced to me the acquaintanceship with Ascot, which was intended to occur on this night. In spite of the sharp cold, I broke out in a sweat as I climbed the small hill on which the agreed place was situated. Arriving there, I did not have to wait long for some sort of thing which was supposed to come there, because arriving on the dome of the hill, I immediately saw a bright light plunge down from the sky, and it sat down not far from me on the frozen hard ground. The bright light went out, and I saw a matte silver and discus-shaped object which stood majestically quiet on three landing spheres and appeared to wait for me. The disc's landing spheres were completely foreign to me, because I had never seen such things with that kind of form before. After a short telepathic invitation, so he must have gotten telepathy from this ship. I approach the ship as if under a gentle compulsion, and at once was lifted in through an opening, just as if by ghostly hands, because there was neither a lift nor some sort of other entrance possibility. I had already repeatedly experienced that with Svath. Each time he brought me into his pear-shaped shift craft. So there must be some sort of technology that literally lifts them up and pulls them into the ship. However, the interior of this ship was fundamentally different in comparison to that of Svath. There was only one single armchair present, and also I was not able to see anyone. The ship was quite obviously unmanned and was remotely steered somehow. So without being asked, I sat in the single but very comfortable armchair. So in that ship, they speed off. They sped off to Jordan. And shortly thereafter, Askit's ship landed. Askit gets out of the ship. It took a half an hour for her to literally get out of that ship. And one of the things that Billy stated when he saw Askit, he said, Askit's clothing also seemed strangely familiar to me. And it was completely different from Svath's somewhat cumbersome clothing, which was reminiscent of a diving suit. And the way Billy describes Askit is that she looked like a very modern angel. And she was actually in a kind of pleated dress with a whitish silver color. And she had this long brunette hair which fell over her shoulders and her face. So, this is a tremendous meeting that Billy had with her. And they go off, and they're in Egypt. And then they get to below the Pyramid of Giza, where they see a discus-shaped spaceship, approximately 300 meters in diameter. Billy had seen a ship like this when he was a very small boy in 1942, and he talks about this. Anyway, this ship was in this giant storage hall for centuries, or even millennia, very deep under the earth, at least 3,000 to 4,000 meters below the Great Pyramid in Giza. And he saw this very heavy Y-shaped cross. He talks about the nails and this brownish-black coating on the nails that he thought maybe was blood. He wasn't sure. And he was wondering if, in fact, he was seeing what he called Emmanuel's crucifixion utensils. And he says, here I stood before everything which was connected with the death of Emmanuel, alias Jesus Christ. And the glassy stones in the little leather pouch were not stones, rather certain precious stones, whose sense and purpose, however, I was not able to fathom. Mute and moved, I stood before these witnesses of ancient times, which had been of worldwide significance for a large part of humanity. So Billy's having a very emotional experience here. He says, mute and moved, I stood there. I looked at the things laying there and sent a grateful, quick prayer to heaven. See, Billy was only 16 years old at this time. That I, of all people, was permitted to see everything here. I thereby quite forgot the words of Svath, who had once said to me that the Christian religion is just as much an irresponsible, evil, poor piece of work for the stupefaction, enslavement of humans, as are all terrestrial religions. Wow, these are very intense words. Now, Billy grew up in a Protestant Christian family. So this still was having a tremendous effect on him, seeing this. Anyway, Ascot quickly took him out of there. And the next contact with Ascot that's documented is called Ascot's Explanations Part 1. And this occurred on February 3rd of 1953. And Ascot starts to talk about creation just as I started the show talking about creation. And Ascot stated that creation is the foundation of life and of being. And she said, we fulfill our mission in the strength of creation, which has not only cosmic but universal significance, because creation is life and creation is being. And to fulfill our mission, we have to neutralize the space-time connection barrier between our and your universes. Now, this is what I was mentioning earlier, that they have the technology to bridge the gap and to travel from one universe to another. And she explains that her homeworld is in the Tao universe in a system called the Akon system. And she explains that her people came to this system long, long ago. And that, well, she talks a little bit about the Lyrians here. Let me read this. Through our incessant explorations, we again found this world, as well as our original homeland, and the very distant descendants of those who from the earliest times were the responsible ones who were relevant to the human life of this world, because a portion of the humans of Earth were not born here. Many are descendants of those who came out of the expanse of outer space, and indeed from the space that you name Lyra and Vega, with the Eye of God, the Ring Nebula. The Ring Nebula was formed by an Ishwish, a king of wisdom, who destroyed a star there. And it, for these extraterrestrial people, it's a symbol of very, very bad, degenerate behavior on the part of human beings. So this is one of Billy's interesting discussions with Ascot. And they talk about the Christian religion. They talk about Earth's, what's called Earth's sister planet. Let me read here. As the Earth's sister planet, it orbited the sun in the position where now the planet Mars goes its way. There was another planet in our solar system. There was actually three planets in our solar system that supported life: Earth, Mars, and Melona. And Ascot is about to tell Billy about Melona. But through the mighty first explosion, a gigantic repulsive effect was produced, and the planet was catapulted away to finally explode in the orbit where it now encircles as the asteroid belt. The name of the planet was Melon. They called it Melon originally, eventually called Melona, and then Melona Phaeton, which then later, because of its destruction, was changed and underwent a slight alteration. Anyway, Ascot is here. Billy met with Ascot for 11 years and had some incredible experiences with Ascot. Billy went, after the experience in the Great Pyramid, he decided to study religion, and he went to the Middle East, where he went to the Ashoka Ashram, where he studied in the Ashoka Ashram Ascot's ship would be seen hovering over the ashram, and she would be a lot of times walking with him in the gardens there. They would have these very profound discussions about various things, like they're discussing the creation today, or in this particular contact anyway. Billy also met Phobal Chang there, who became a UN diplomat. Later, Phobal Chang would come to Switzerland when she was older and reminisce with Billy about their experiences and contact with Ascot. Phobal had also seen Ascot and had some kind of telepathic contact with her as well. After Billy's contacts with Ascot ended, he had about 11 years of what you would call a normal life. This was after he lost his left arm in the bus accident, and he went back to Switzerland. He married his first wife, Calliope. They had three children, and about 1975 is when his contacts started with Semyase. The contacts with Semyase are pretty well known. One of the most famous contacts with Semyase occurred on March 26, 1975. So at this time, Semyase was about 344 years old, which would equate to about 30 years old in our age. She was a tall, slender woman, reddish, blondish hair. Unfortunately, in 1977, she suffered a life-threatening accident at the Silver Star Center in Hinterschmidt-Ruti and had to be taken to her Planet Era for medical treatment. She came back and continued to have contacts with Billy until about 1984. So how many years was that? 7 years. She had a cerebral collapse and had to be taken to the Tao universe for treatment. So Billy's contacts with Semyase were cut short. Maybe his most important contacts were with Semyase. It's hard to tell, really. One of the things she talked about in Contact Report 10 was that she talked about the human spirit. She says, the human bears a spirit that does not die nor sleep during the deepest sleep. It records all your thoughts and your motions. It informs the human whether his thoughts are correct if he has learned to pay attention. You know, I've always paid attention to that particular passage. One of the things it says is that this spirit form that we have can tell you whether your thoughts are correct or false. I've never been able to pinpoint exactly how this works. My suspicion is that false thoughts tend to produce bad feelings, and that when we start to detect bad feelings in our psyche, it can be because, potentially, could be because of false thoughts. So that's one of the things that we need to continue to do, is to monitor our thoughts and our feelings. One of the aspects of the psyche that I failed to mention earlier is that the psyche regulates, it looks after the material conscious space, feelings and thoughts. The feelings there come from the German word Gefühl, which means the feelings emerging from thoughts. Gefühl is a noun. So, again, if your psyche becomes either positively or negatively unequalized, then the human being can fall into what's called askertit or asartung. Asartung is a noun. Askertit is an adjective. And what that means is to get badly out of control of the good human nature. That's falling out of balance. And the goal in the spiritual life is to maintain an equalized harmony. Now the Gemut, as I talked about earlier, controls, regulates, looks after the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. The Gemut can only be influenced by neutral positive thoughts. Remember, the universal consciousness is neutral positive. And the Gemut always exhibits this equalized harmony. Okay? The Gemut will supply the psyche with these things called swinging waves that originate from the realm of cosmo-electromagnetic life. And the spiritual consciousness that we have only operates in this equalized state, in this neutral positive form. So your Gemut, and remember there's ironically a universal Gemut in the creation, your Gemut is not connected with the physical realm at all. The spirit is described as the bearer of the creative realm, and every human is said to have a spirit form. Here's what one of the things Semyasi said when she was talking to Billy on this 10th contact. She said, "A human's yearning lies in the joy that remains for the imperishable life, the permanent peace, the spiritual and consciousness related wealth that never fades and lasts forever. Heaven and earth will perish, but truth, knowledge, wisdom, and the spirit will never be changing. The spirit and the consciousness are on the lookout for what is perfect, for harmony, for peace, for cognition and realization, for knowledge, wisdom, truth, beauty, for love, and for all the true being, all of which are of absolute duration." There's that word being again. I still don't understand the significance of that. "All of these lead to what forms the spiritual kingdom of wisdom. All are existing within what is creative." Now, excuse me. One of the other things that Semyasi talked about is the terrestrial philosophers of old. And she described that our philosophers would say the human is the microcosm within the macrocosm. And we do have all these repeating patterns in nature, like the spiral arm of a seashell and the spiral arm of the galaxy and the spiral arm of our DNA. And we talked about the double helix arms of creation, although I don't know where those are. So there's these repeating patterns in the microcosm, the smallest level, and the macrocosm at the highest level. Semyasi called the spirit the wonder of all wonders, and she talked about all power emerging from it. So what is power? Power is the ability to do or to act. The power is the ability to accomplish something. So that's what power is. And she called it the wonder of all wonders. And she also said if a human is happy, that his happiness comes from within, because happiness is a self-created state. It's never a location. And that joy comes forth from the human's inner part, from poise. And this is where we get to the idea of wisdom conditioned love. And I kind of started talking about that earlier, that love is the highest principle in creation. and that everything follows that principle in absolute logic. And every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And Billy talks about something called a false love. Well, the opposite of the false love is the wisdom conditioned love. The wisdom conditioned love is genuine love. So affective love is considered a false love. But genuine love is a wellspring of eternal consistency. It's absolutely independent of your personality, your age, your appearance. With false love, factors like age and appearance play an important role. Factors like wealth, your profession, your societal position. But true love is not an emotion-based love. This false love that we're talking about, remember there's a true love, real love, and that there's a false love. And Billy's contrasting the two. The wisdom-conditioned love is the true love. The false love is the unstable love that's dependent on circumstances like your spiritual or your societal position, your appearance, how much money you have. And he talks about the false love, the false form of love, and the fact that it can actually turn into rage. So you have to be careful. If you're functioning under a false love, that love can actually turn into rage. Let me read what it says here. Therefore, this emotion-based false form of love is subject to enormous fluctuations in intensity and can thus suffer changes and even transform into rage and hatred. Billy's deeper explanations of these two types of love, the genuine affective love and the false affective love. So these are the two kinds of love that we have on earth. And it's interesting, they quote from the book, How to Live, on page 34. It says, love is not situated in the heart, nor is it a power of a God. Let me see if I can find that. Doesn't pop out at me right away. But it does say the psyche can only be harmed through feelings and thoughts of an unreal nature, thus through imaginations which are called forth from anxiety, suffering, worry, and so forth. And I wonder how much anxiety and suffering are related to this false form of love that Billy is talking about. So remember, there's a real love, a wisdom-conditioned love. Here's how it's defined. Love is the absolute certainty that one co-lives and coexists with everything, thus in all that which exists within fauna and flora, within one fellow human beings, in each and every material, spiritual, regardless of its kind, within the existence of the entire universe and beyond. So anyway, okay. We have been talking about The Way to Live, one of Billy's books, The Psyche, another one of his books. I never got into The Might of Thoughts tonight. We talked a little bit about the contacts with Ascot, the contacts with Sfath and Sannyasi. I hope you've enjoyed this evening's show, and we'll talk to you next week. And you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder.